You know what? Get over it, because we've got a country to run and that's what I've demanded of them.
I wish ScoMo and Joshy every success.
Government members do not trust each other.
I'm a bit lost for words. That doesn't happen very often.
The wrap.
It's the end of the week. Time to wrap up some of the biggest stories from the past few days. Tonight, my guests are Monica Attard, former ABC broadcaster and head of journalism at UTS, and Wendy Toohey as well, lifestyle editor at The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Hello.
All right, Wendy, you've chosen the story which I think is fair to say is our biggest domestic story of the day. It's really dominated, and it has for some months. But this latest development, former Wallabies fullback Israel Folau has launched a GoFundMe page. Walk me through what he's doing here.
Well, he's trying to raise money for his challenge against Rugby Australia, who sacked him in May for breaking the terms of his own contract with his homophobic comments, which he refused to back down from. Originally, when this furor broke, he said he'd just withdraw if his views were considered inconsistent with the values of the game. Now he's decided to take them, presumably he thinks it might end up in a high court. He's asking Australians for $3 million for his fight for what he believes is right. He says it's about freedom of religion, and he should be free to practice his religion without discrimination. And the thing that disturbs, well, there's a lot of things that are bothering me about this, and I'm sure other people, but one of them is that within, you know, just today, he's raised $300,000 from people, and it's causing, of course, a lot of, you know, fighting about the issue again on Twitter. I mean, just when we've had some quiet space after that horrible marriage equality referendum, now people's right to have their sexual orientation without discrimination is again under fire. So I think a lot of people would be feeling like I do, pretty stirred up about this.
Here's a little of what he says in the video on the fundraising page.
The cost to me and my family of continuing my legal action against Rugby Australia is expected to be significant. To help me, I've engaged a top-flight legal team, including one of Australia's leading workplace relations barristers.
So that's from his video, which is online. I want to bring you in, Monica. There's so many angles to this story.
There are.
The latest level of outrage appears to be that he's kind of a guy with quite a bit of money trying to fundraise, and I've seen the point made by some, you know, juxtaposing it with other fundraising for really sick kids. Is that what's stirring people up?
Oh, I think it's part of it. I mean, it is obscene, and it's tone deaf on a number of levels, on that level as well as the substance of what he's trying to do. I mean, I think it is justified, the outrage. I think that, you know, you've got somebody who's been incredibly well paid, who hasn't really understood the offence that he's caused, the obscene nature of his comments, really. I don't think he's understood what that means to a lot of Australians. And I think that it's also very divisive, because he seems to be appealing to a section of Australian society that A, might agree with his views, but B, jumping on this freedom of speech bandwagon. And so it's, you know, freedom of speech is a very difficult concept, as we all know, and I'm not sure that we want to get into that discussion here. But, you know, freedom of speech that doesn't offend is what Folau doesn't seem to have a grip on. And I think the other thing that's really offensive about what he's done is the rider at the end of his appeal for money, that he is not necessarily bound to use the money for his legal defence.
Yep. That is astounding, isn't it? I thought that
absolutely
was brazen.
Totally brazen. I mean, what's that about?
What is that about?
Well, I assume that's, well, according to one of his former teammates, Drew Mitchell, that's about greed.
Yes, I saw that tweet. That was an amazing tweet. A former Wallaby, right?
Yes, and played alongside him. I mean, he's definitely ripping the guts out of his own sport along the way. And it's not just offensive. I mean, it's actually dangerous. You know, kids look up to sports stars, whether you like it or not. And this is a sports star saying that hell awaits, you know, people who might already be in a very vulnerable situation.
Okay, playing devil's advocate here. It is his faith. He clearly believes it very deeply. And as a few people have pointed out, this is in the Bible and this is the book he believes in. So, Wendy, yes, people keep focusing on the breach of contract issue, but is there a bigger issue about the right to share views which make perhaps many of us uncomfortable.
Well, okay, so freedom of speech is a very live issue, of course, and that's one thing that Corey Bernardes, Conservatives Australia, thought it might win a lot of love over, and, well, he's just shut the party down. I don't think freedom of speech comes without freedom from responsibility. I think that's basic, and he has a responsibility not to put people at risk.
Does it really put people at risk to...
Yes, to be told that your sexuality is so sinful and wrong. If you're, look, plenty of people who've had to fight fights have a lot of wherewithal and resilience, and probably that doesn't cause them an identity crisis, but how can you be sure that it won't in some others?
Monica, do you have any sympathy for, clearly a lot of people are quite cynical about the GoFundMe campaign, right? Let's park that part of the, although, because I can see that it was quite tone deaf in the way that it's been expressed. But the issue at the heart of this, the expression of his views, is there a case that he has?
Oh, look, it's such a difficult one. I mean, you know, we don't have any laws that enshrine our freedom of speech. That's just a technical perspective, I suppose. Does he have a right? I mean, everybody's got a right to express themselves freely. What we don't have a right to do is to offend other people. I mean, I know that there are some former members of government who might have said, you know, everyone has the right to be, freedom of speech includes the right to be a bigot. I mean, it's just not a view that I can agree with, frankly. And that could be my own personal, that's my own personal perspective, having grown up as a member of an immigrant community like you did, PK, you know, so you kind of get quite sensitive about some of the insults that can be, the racist insults that can be hurled your way. So it's something that I feel quite strongly about. I mean, I don't feel that people have a right. I don't believe that people have a right to offend other people. And what Folau did offends other people.
I think he offends plenty of Christians too.
Yeah, and I think he offends plenty of Christians as well. So no, I think it has its limitations.
Isn't one element, though, that... He's really becoming a martyr, isn't he, for the cause, Wendy?
That's what he's setting himself up as, yeah. And how much of it is about him, I wonder. And certainly there are a number of people asking the same question.
But I do suspect it'll only be in a very, very, very small corner of Australian society. I don't think it'll be a broad movement. You know, I don't think it'll garner much momentum.
I wonder, just finally, before we move on to another story, Wendy, how it will play into the broader debate we're about to have on religious discrimination. Some people want to see it as a Religious Freedom Act. I know many liberals who say, no, it's about religious discrimination, not about freedom. So there's a lot of nuance there. But
well, I think he's probably capitalising on the timing. And let's not forget, this debate is about his contract and the fact that he broke it. And I'm sure he'd like to see this as a religious freedom issue. I mean, of course, people should be free to practice their religion across the board. And I think they're two separate issues.
Lots of people grumpy with me. the irony. Hi, PK. Where in the Bible does it say that homosexuals will go to hell? I haven't seen that verse, says Michael. I'm not going to go through the Bible with you or defend the Bible. The point is there is a debate. And people do share that view that he has the right. And I was just trying to get your response, wasn't I, Wendy?
Yes, absolutely, Patricia. I'll just usher you out of the building, putting my body between yours and the protest.
If you're just tuning in, this is RN Drive. Wendy Toohey is in the studio with me, Monica Attard too. We're going to move to a big, big story that has certainly focused our attentions in Australia. Monica, earlier this week, a Dutch-led joint investigation team said three Russians and a Ukrainian have been charged over the murder of 298 people on board MH17, shot down over Ukraine, of course, many Australians as well. Mm-hmm. Pretty significant news, nearly 5 years since that horrific incident. Now, our Foreign Minister Maurice Payne welcomed the news as a very important step.
We are strongly committed to working with our counterparts in the joint investigation team to holding these perpetrators to account. And I would really like to commend the Australian Federal Police, who have been part of this process for all of these years now and have made a very significant contribution.
Monica, what are these four people actually being accused of?
Well, they're being accused of having taken possession of a Buk missile launcher, which is a Russian piece of hardware that was used to down MH17. And there is another of them, Igor Gherkin, who is otherwise known as, I think he's Vladimir Strelkov, who's the most prominent of the four charged. He's a very, very controversial figure who's featured very, very significantly in the Russian-backed separatist rebellion in eastern Ukraine, particularly in Donetsk. And he's the charges there relate to conversations that he had with the then head of Crimea, the Russian-backed head of Crimea, pleading for Moscow to help them with artillery in their fight against the Ukrainians. So, you know, I mean, has anything much changed? I'm not sure that Maurice Payne is actually correct in saying that this is a very, very significant thing. I mean, I think there's not much that we've found out in the last few days that we didn't really know. Even these names had been mentioned. We just now have charges. They'll be charged in absentia, which means, of course, they will never face court because Russia will never agree to their extradition. And indeed, Russia's and Ukraine's constitutions both specifically prohibit the extradition of Russian nationals to any country. So they'll never serve any time. Putin has come out and said that the evidence is flimsy because it's largely based on open source investigations that can be interpreted in different ways. You'd expect him to say that, though. You know, in any event, there's no evidence, even in this latest move proffered, that the Kremlin gave any order to shoot down an airliner, much less a commercial airliner in eastern Ukraine. I mean, I think it's interesting because we've got names and charges, but we already knew that the bombing of the aircraft was a mistake, and this the Dutch investigators have confirmed that this week. The tapes released at the time on the day and re-released this week show that those responsible for pressing the button believed that they were shooting down a Ukrainian military aircraft, not a commercial airliner. I mean, regardless, it's a war crime, obviously. And at the end of the day, there's only one credible theory as to what's happened, and that is that the rebels sought Moscow's help. They obtained a Buk missile and a Russian defence team to help them in launching it, and they killed 298 people. Doesn't get much worse.
Wendy, does it help the 38? I mean, 38 Australians obviously perished in this awful incident, and there are many families still grieving and wanting closure and consequence for this. Does it help those people?
Well, having just seen some of them responding on TV, letting them speak for themselves rather than trying to imagine what it's like being in that hellish situation, I don't think it does.
No, I don't think it does either.
It doesn't seem to give any closure or really any comfort.
What are the course? I mean, this is just...
Well,
we have tried everything, haven't we, Monica? I mean, Australia has been advocating on this. Obviously, we've heard Julie Bishop throughout the week. I think she was a strong foreign minister in this area, and yet we've just got this.
Well, you know, Russia has a permanent seat on the United Nations Security Council, and so that has stopped a UN-led investigation of what's happened. I mean, I guess the charging of them, I think the international community is hoping that these charges might force the Kremlin's hand in lifting that sanction. I don't believe that will happen. This has many tentacles, this story, particularly inside Russia. I mean, what's interesting to me, I think, is that inside Russia there's virtually no visibility of this story. Russians have never believed that their government was responsible. There's no cogent evidence to prove that their government was responsible. Every Russian that I know would tell you that the level of disarray in the Russian military is such that, despite its reputation, that, you know, in the far outer regions, the further and further you roam, the more autonomously military commanders seem to operate. So upon whose authority that Buk missile launcher was transferred or loaned to the rebels is not known. Even though this is interesting this week because the evidence points to conversations between Gherkin, Strelkov, and the Russian-backed Crimean leader to act as a conduit to Moscow, there's no evidence to show that Moscow responded to that. So it could have been a rogue thing. But inside of Russia, I mean, they're sitting there saying, look, we've actually got bigger problems to deal with here. I mean, it's sad, we regret it, it's awful, but we've got really, really big problems. And they have. And some of those problems are born of this incident. That is that there were sanctions imposed on Russia after MH17 was downed. There were sanctions imposed after Crimea was annexed. And those sanctions are now 4 or 5 years old, and they are really, really biting into the economy and into people's lives. So, you know, you've seen a president go from a 92% popularity rating down to 46, you know, for Putin, absolutely unheard of. So they really do have very, very significant problems to deal with, and they're not tuning into this one.
We're wrapping up the news week here on RN Drive. Monica Attard was just speaking there. She's the head of journalism at UTS. And Wendy Toohey is the lifestyle editor at The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald. 0418 226 576 is our text line if you want to participate in this conversation. I'm getting lots of texts, I've got to say, Monica, saying, how great to hear Monica Attard back on RN.
Remember
her voice so well from her time in Moscow, says Alison. And a few others have said the same thing. But Alison, you represent all the people saying the same thing. All right, Wendy, not a great week for social media influencers.
No, well, talking lifestyle, if you are engaging in lifestyle, you probably know about influencers who are people who, as an alternative to another source of employment, they sort of spruik things using their image, their personal brand, their physical attractiveness often in order to either get what they want or to, you know, make money or just generally boost their own fame, which, as we know, is the reason for being of most of us in 2019. But this week, the tides kind of turned on a number of them all at once, which is quite interesting, I thought. The two who probably fell the hardest are these Germans, Katalin Onk and Elena Engelhardt, who ask their $44,000 followers for $16,000 Australian dollars in order to tandem cycle around Africa because they feel that they're helping others so much by their lifestyle that everyone should donate. And in fact, they are so tone deaf that the young man even said, you know, at the moment, you know, mum's working two jobs back in Germany to fund our, you know, our Instagram online earning cape or whatever. And, you know, thanks, mum. We just want you to know this is not only for us, but the hundreds of others that benefit from you by being, you know, their personal growth, really. Anyway, I reckon not that long ago they would have kind of got away with this, but the internet's exploded on them, and now he's had to take a long walk. I'm not sure how he's funding it, but he's looking what is deep inside himself, and he's going to ask a few questions. But it's quite interesting. And then Belle Gibson, of course, was in court in Melbourne this week. I'm looking like something from a Chanel ad from about 1990 in sunglasses that were purportedly by Saint Laurent, but she can't pay her $440,000 fine for duping the whole of Australia into saying she cured her brain cancer with nutrition. And she's pleading poor, and that $13,000 on clothes and accessories, all from, you know, her influencer peak days. Well, that's just by the by. I can't afford to pay. And interestingly, there used to be some sort of caution and sort of sensitivity around, well, maybe we should be careful. You know, we shouldn't set a precedent of the witch hunt or the, you know, the running through somebody so hard that, you know, it could be detrimental. But now I think the chutzpah on display has certainly removed that sentiment.
So there's a backlash almost against influencers.
There's a backlash against this idea that somebody on somebody's say-so who's being paid and earning money for something, that you should take their word and do something in your own life on the strength of that we should just ignore the fact there are strings. And I find that very comforting.
Ah, couldn't have come any sooner, really. I mean,
no, it seems like a long time coming. The one who I actually feel sorry for is a young Swedish girl, and she posted on her Instagram to her followers. She posted an artful picture of her with her back to the camera in a white bikini, gazing over a rice field where a man was bent double, actually doing work, and said,
"Oh, that was terrible. I saw that.
I know. Every morning, when I'm here, I'm just thinking about how different my life is from his. You know.
Oh,
yeah. Inspirational quote. Yeah, for an influencer. Anyway, bang. The sky actually did fall right in.
Yeah.
And she's shut her account. Now, I don't want anyone to suffer personally, but I do think it's good to see these people. You know,
so do
the
I.
Narcissism
I think it's
kind of limited by us all.
You've just nailed it, the narcissism. But equally, I find the sort of level of hate. We're always working in such extremes, aren't we? You know, sure, call it out.
Well, that's why I said, you know, I actually feel for her because she'll actually be suffering. But then again, you know, going to another country and using someone doing work as your prop for your Instagram, well, I think that's rather distasteful.
It is rather distasteful. All right, Monica, let's talk about your story. Ash Barty could become I know you're very excited. Okay, calm down, Monica. It's okay.
So
deep breaths.
Excited.
The first Aussie woman to top the world tennis rankings in more
Isn't
than 40.
Fantastic.
It is more than fantastic. She is so likable too, which makes it like we're just so happy on so many levels.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she's a genuinely lovely woman who plays fair without fanfare. There's no scandal, you know. And to see that she's come this far, having worked so quietly to regroup after a time out of tennis playing cricket, you know, she loves the game. She appreciates its history. You know, she's got that fighting spirit. You watch her with sheer joy. I mean, I watch some of our male players, and I've got my heart in my mouth because I don't know what's going to happen next. With Ash, it's just quiet determination, and I think her doing so well in this period of time where our reputation has been, well, you know, a little stressed by some of the male players.
One of them just had a tanty, actually. Just
he
overnight.
Did.
That's right.
Yeah, actually, I was watching that. He did have a tanty, and you know, they're regular tanties. So every match, I mean, you watch Ash Barty, you know, there's not going to be a tantrum. It's just going to be pure tennis, and it's a delight. It's absolutely wonderful to see. So yeah, I am over the moon excited.
She gives us permission to like tennis again
and be happy.
Yeah,
in an uncomplicated way.
Totally.
Oh, totally. Look, I hope she gets to number one. All right, recommendations for the weekend, Wendy.
Well, I am excited about this book. Actually, I'm sounding like an influencer now. a journalist I knew years ago called Stephanie Wood, who wrote for many years for Good Weekend, wrote a cover story on the 28th of April 2017, which I commend you, called Internet Searches Reveal Only So Much, about how she was comprehensively duped by a man leading a double life who she was led to believe was in love with her and they were moving towards a future.
I remember that story.
Do you remember that? Absolutely gut-wrenching and incredibly well-written. Well, she has a book coming out called Fake. I have received it and I'm looking forward to reading it. And if it's halfway as good as the Good Weekend writing, which I'm sure it will be, then I'm happy to recommend it on spec.
What a name too, Fake. It's sort of in the zeitgeist, isn't it? There's a lot of fake stuff going on. Monica,
look forward to that.
Recommendation?
Well, mine's not a book. Mine's actually a series that I'm currently watching, which is actually incredibly good. It's called Good Girls. It's kind of like a feminist Breaking Bad.
Ooh.
It's really good. It's actually really, really good. It's really well shot. It's well directed. It's got Christina Hendricks in it, who you might remember from Mad Men, Mae Whitman. It's just outrageously relatable. You know, it's just one of those ones that about a group of suburban mothers in Chicago who basically have got to turn to crime to make ends meet for their families. And it just rollicks along. It's fantastic. Have a look.
Sure will. Hey, guys, always great to hang out with you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks, VK. Bye-bye.
Monica Attard is the head of journalism at UTS and, of course, a former foreign correspondent for the ABC, as many of you have observed in your text messages. And also Wendy Toohey, who's a lifestyle editor at The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald. This is RN Drive.